Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen,
you're listening to The Traveling Culturati, exploring the style and culture of travel with travel pro Javon Harley, exclusively on HUR Voices.
Hey there, it's The Traveling Culturati, exclusively on HR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm your host and travel pro, Javon Harley. Make sure you visit the website. It's travelingculturati.com. Go ahead and friend and like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and just connect with me on social media. But I really want you to join the Travel Club because we've got some great trips coming up this year, especially in September. Going to Ghana, visiting Accra, and it's going to be historic and educational, maybe even sometimes a little emotional, but it's a great destination. The second trip we have is also in September, and it's for the grand opening of the National Museum of African American History and Culture. And this is such a historic event, and we're going to be there for the grand opening. Visit the website, travelingculturati.com, so you can check it out, join the travel club, and maybe even come with. We hope you do that. Today I've got a great show for you. From elite to everyone, the landscape of the U.S. domestic traveler closely resembles the country's demographics. What does that mean? Well, we have Airlines for America on with us later, and they're going to tell us what that study revealed and what all of that means. Of course, we've got Javon's Travel Minute, we have the question of the week, and we've got the culture report. But right now, we've got some travel news. And Marion Starwood have finally gotten their act together. The shareholders of Marriott and Starwood have approved the merger, which will put the two companies well on their way to becoming the largest hotel chain in the game. The deal would give Starwood stockholders 0.8 shares of Marriott common stock, plus $21 in cash for each share of Starwood common stock. Marriott will end up paying about $13.3 billion. Arne Sorensen, the CEO of Marriott International, will run the combined companies, and he says he expects the deal to close by the middle of this year. Sorensen also went on to say that he appreciates the stockholders' vote of confidence in the ability to drive long-term value and opportunity as a combined company. Shareholders with more than 97% of Marriott's shares were present and voting at the meeting, and Starwood shareholders of more than 95% of shares were present and voting at the meeting. What does this mean? Well, it means that this affirmative vote by Starwood shareholders effectively ends the possibility for any other bids for Starwood. Starwood shareholders will now own about 34% of the combined company's common stock after completion of the merger. Marriott still has to obtain regulatory approvals from the European Union and China, but Sorensen expects to take care of that over the next few months. The combined company will have over 30 brands and 1.1 million rooms. TSA is being blamed for long lines. They have staff cuts that are causing backups at O'Hare International Airport. Airlines are concerned that passengers could miss their flights once the busy summer season approaches. Lines can quickly swell, causing wait time between 30 and 60 minutes, especially in the morning. The long security lines and wait times can be blamed on TSA's staffing reductions and incorrect assumptions about how many people would sign up for expedited service screening, heightened security measures, and a higher-than-expected increase in air traffic. The problem is not just in Chicago. Atlanta recently threatened to hire a private company to handle airport security because of reduced TSA staffing. And because of security concerns, a slow process is becoming more common at airports around the world. TSA admits it has an issue and are working towards getting more travelers enrolled in the TSA PreCheck program. So far, only about 6.5 million people have enrolled, but TSA hopes to have 25 million flyers enrolled into the program by 2019. TSA Administrator Peter Neffinger says the agency also wants to add more canine units in order to reduce the line. But get to the airports early this summer. We don't want you to miss those flights. It's always sad to report dirty cruise lines, and this one really takes the cake. live cockroaches, dirty grout, hazardous cheese were found on a luxury liner and found by inspectors. Swimming pools and spa baths were shut down, and kitchen staff was not keeping food at the correct temperatures. The ship is Oceana. Their swimming pool and spa baths were shut down, and the kitchen staff was not keeping food at the correct temperatures. Oriana, the sister ship to Oceana, also violated safety rules. The Oceana cruise ship is the fifth largest in service with P&O Cruises. It scored 82 points on their inspection out of 100, and 85 is the passing mark for cruise ships. The latest CDC report explains how poor food handling practices and deficient water sanitation mishaps by a cruise liner can jeopardize the health of the traveling public. The cockroaches were found under a grill. Cheese was kept at temperatures that were too warm. The swimming pool and spa pools were shut down because of insufficient levels of chlorine and bromine. They also found they were not disinfected or poorly tested. The Oriana has had three norovirus outbreaks in the last 5 years. A spokeswoman for the cruise line said, "We are extremely disappointed in the results of this inspection, and we immediately rectified the areas identified as needing attention." I should hope so. For more on cruise ships, the world's newest cruise ship, Ovation of the Seas, has arrived. Ovation of the Seas is the latest cruise vessel to be launched by Royal Caribbean Lines. This new high-tech ship is equipped with different and fun features like robot bartenders, the Ripcord by iFly Skydiving Simulator, bumper cars, and a host of other fancy gadgets. SeaPlex is the largest indoor sports and entertainment complex at sea, with attractions ranging from roller skating, video gaming, to a circus school complete with flying trapeze classes. The class's signature Northern Star, a jewel-shaped glass capsule that rises 300 feet above sea level, providing a 360-degree view from high above the ship, will also debut. The level of interest for the Ovation of the Seas has exceeded expectations, and they're currently over 90% sold for summer sailing. The U.S. government has issued another travel alert, and this time it's for Turkey. They've issued an emergency travel warning for Turkey. The warning was published on the U.S. Embassy's website recently, alerting U.S. citizens of credible threats in tourist areas, particularly at docks and public squares in Istanbul and Antalya. Islamic State groups and Kurdish militants have claimed a number of deadly attacks in Turkey in the recent months. The U.S. warning followed a warning by Israel's Counterterrorism Bureau, urging all Israelis to avoid Turkey. The U.K.'s Foreign and Commonwealth Office says the threat from terrorism remains high and says further attacks are likely. Terrorist groups have publicly threatened to attack tourist sites in Turkey. The alert states, please exercise extreme caution if you're in the vicinity of such areas. And you can get more information at travel.state.gov. Well, there's a boom in Cuba, and it is causing a shortage of beer. That's right, Cuba is running out of beer. As the travel restrictions have eased, allowing Americans to travel to Cuba, they have been unable to keep up with the demand for beer. The number of U.S. travelers has increased by 77%, while overall tourist arrivals are up by 17% to a record of 3.5 million last year. The country's main brewer, Bucanero, which is a joint venture between the government and Anheuser-Busch, said it will have to import 3 million cases of beer from Dominica to meet the demand in the short term. The Bucanero Brewing Company produces 4 Cuban beer brands. The arrival of U.S. travelers has sparked a big boom in private sector hotels, bars, cafes, and restaurants. Marketing specialist Gonzalez of the Cuban state news agency, ACN, said the only solution is to build a new brewery. Maybe travelers should shift their taste buds to those rum drinks. couple of my favorites are the Papa Doble, named after Ernest Hemingway and made with grapefruit juice. And my other favorite is Conchanchera. Or maybe I just like the name. It's very similar to Caipirinha, and it's made with muddled lime and sugar and rum or cane alcohol. Accor Hotels, one of the world's largest hotel chains, has announced that they will plant vegetable gardens at over 3,000 of their hotels in an effort to prevent food waste. Accor Hotels has realized that too much food has been thrown away, so they came up with a way to reduce food waste by 30%. Accor Hotels, which includes the Pullman, Sofitel, Novotel, Mercure and Ibis chains, generates 25 to 30% of its revenue by serving 150 million meals a year. With up to one-third of food produced being wasted, according to estimates by UN's Food and Agricultural Organization, there's ample room for businesses to save money while also helping reduce hunger and greenhouse gas emissions associated with farming and transport. Amir Nahai, who's in charge of Accor's food operations, said that menus currently offering up to 40 main courses would be slimmed down to about 20 main courses with more local products. They intend to support urban agriculture with the creation of 1,000 vegetable gardens in their hotels by 2020. In its previous five-year environmental plan, Accor Hotels said it cut water consumption by nearly 9%, energy consumption by 5.3%, and carbon emissions by 6.2%. They're actively striving to make the world a better place. Princess Cruises has revealed the eighth cruise wonder of the world. Princess Cruises, in partnership with Condé Nast Traveler, reveals that the Grand Canal of Venice was voted the eighth cruise wonder of the world. And this was voted by their guests. The announcement follows the 2015 Seven Cruise Wonders of the World. All these historic landmarks have unique and wonderful sights to see. How about getting fingerprinted to buy your goods? Well, the Japanese government will begin testing a system this summer allowing foreign tourists to purchase items in stores using only their fingerprints. The idea is to prevent crime and eliminate the idea of having to carry cash or credit cards with them. The government is hoping the system will be in place and running by the 2020 Tokyo Olympic and Paralympic Games. During the experiment, tourists will register their fingerprints and other personal information, like credit card data. Then, when they want to buy something, they simply place two fingers on special devices that will be available at stores. In addition, the government will use fingerprint authentication in place of the current requirement of foreign tourists to show their passports when checking into hotels. We'll see how that goes. Well, that's it for travel news. And when we come back, we have Javon's Travel Minute, the question of the week, and a special guest from Airlines for America joining us. You're listening to the Traveling Culturati. I'm Javon Harley on HR Voices Sirius XM Channel 141. Welcome back to the Traveling Culturati. I'm your host and travel pro, Javon Harley. Traveling Culturati is all about the style and culture of travel. Make sure you visit our website. It's travelingculturati.com. And make sure you sign up for that travel club.
And now, Javon's Travel Minute.
According to Profit Confidential, the top 10 wealthiest nations from the bottom up are Saudi Arabia, Switzerland, the United States, yes, we're in eighth position at the wealthiest nation, United Arab Emirates, Norway, Kuwait, Brunei, Singapore, Luxembourg, and the number one wealthiest nation is, drumroll please, Qatar. Now, before its oil boom, Qatar was a poor pearl fishing country, and now it's the world's largest exporter of liquefied natural gas, and that, along with petroleum, represents more than 70% of its total revenue and more than 60% of gross domestic product. I guess you can call that more of an oil kaboom than just an oil boom. Qatari nationals are only 12% of the population, and that's of 2.2 million, and they earn a per capita of $146,000 annually. That's almost three times that of the United States. 83% of their population is literate, and a new reform allows women to vote and hold office. Well, way to go, Qatar. This is Javon, and that was your Travel Minute. Joining me today is Airlines for America Senior Vice President of Communications, Jean Medina. Hello, Jean, and welcome to the Traveling Culturati.
Hi, Javon. Thanks for having me.
Certainly. Thanks for joining me. I'm so excited about what's happening in the airline industry, especially for America. Airlines for America recently conducted a study, and they found out how airways have changed in recent years. Jean, what is Airlines for America? Let's start there.
We are a trade association representing the major airlines in the U.S. here based in Washington, D.C.
The recent study that you conducted, what did it reveal primarily?
It revealed that airlines are now open and available, and airfare is affordable and accessible to the vast majority of people in a way it never has been before. And that people traveling now very much more closely represent the entire U.S. as opposed to the very few who used to be able to travel decades ago when it was far less affordable.
I have been in the travel industry, and I've been traveling since I was in high school, and I remember the days I used to have to get dressed up to fly. And in traveling for industry, they wouldn't even allow me on the plane if I didn't have on a suit or dress and pantyhose. That's a far cry from what it is today.
It is. It is indeed. The great thing is for people that it's just so much more affordable. So we're seeing one of the fastest growing in fact, the majority of people who flew in 2015 came from households that had an income of less than $75,000 a year, which just speaks to how very affordable airfare is.
What did the study reveal as far as how satisfied the average flyer is with their experience in air travel?
The average flyer is very satisfied with their experience in air travel. When we did the study, and this was a study of 3,000 Americans, adults, and we found that 80% of those we surveyed were either satisfied or very satisfied with their experience, and only 6% were dissatisfied. So we believe that speaks to not only the affordability, but the fact that airlines have been profitable for about 6 years now and are really taking those investments and putting them back into the product and back into the experience. So you're seeing new planes, you're seeing new apps, you're seeing larger overhead bins, you're seeing, you know, more outlets at gates, you're seeing things that make the travel experience better for customers, and that was certainly backed up by our survey.
I'm glad to hear that, because when fuel prices went up and we were all charged a fuel surcharge, and then when prices went down, those fuel surcharges didn't go away immediately, and a lot of the airlines did say that they would be reinvesting the dollars and the what they would save on lower fuel costs. So I'm glad to see that that's actually happening.
It is. And you're seeing it both in airfare and you're seeing it in investment. The airlines have been investing at a rate of about $1.4 billion a month, and that's a level of investment that we haven't seen in many years. And they're doing that in things like new planes. For example, U.S. Airlines took, on average, a new plane every day in 2015, and orders are on track for the same in 2016. So that's really over 700 new planes. And those are things that customers see when you get on the plane, that, you know, a new plane is a very different experience, and customers are seeing that. And also, frequent flyers and people who travel are very tech-savvy people. And so you're seeing advances in airline apps, for example, where no longer when you're at the airport you have to wait to talk to somebody at the gate to see if you're on the standby list. You can look at the app. You can see where the plane you're going to get on, where it's coming from. You can see if your plane's on time. You can see where you are on the upgrade list. The traveler has so much more information right in the palm of their hands. And the majority of people we surveyed have a smartphone, so that if you're seeing a great relationship between the technology and the traveler being able to help him or herself.
And I think that really lowers the anxiety that people get when traveling, especially when there is a delay or a schedule change or something that they need to be alerted to when you have that information at your fingertips. What are the top reasons people take to the skies?
Well, the main reasons people take to the sky is we actually saw a shift this year. You know, we at Airlines for America, we had done this survey for years with Gallup, but we hadn't done one since 1997. So it had been a little while. We wanted to see what people, why they were traveling, for what purpose, and, you know, what was driving their travel decision. And this was the first time we saw a drop in terms of people, more people were traveling for personal and leisure purposes as opposed to business purposes. So from the survey of 2015 airline travelers, about 48% of people were taking trips, on average 2.3 trips a year for personal leisure purposes, and 31% were traveling for business. And that's a drop from what we saw in 1997 when majority of people were traveling for business.
How do travelers feel about a la carte ticket pricing?
When the price will be lower, if they are able to choose and pay for only the services they want and they value, they like it. 67%, the majority of people, said they would prefer to be able to pick and choose what services they want and what they pay for, knowing that ultimately their fare will be lower. Now, the great thing about airlines is customers have many choices among airlines who have all-in ticket pricing and airlines that have pricing that's very specific as to you pick and choose what you want and what experience you want. But the vast majority said they would prefer to have that. We certainly see that trend most high among millennial travelers. Now, these are people that, you know, they've always known the a la carte pricing. They didn't fly during the days when everything was all included. So they're very used to and they're very comfortable with the a la carte pricing, particularly because they're very price conscious and they know that they'll be able to get a lower price. Same is true for retirees. They also make up a big portion of travel, and they also very much embrace the give me what I want and what I don't want. I don't want to pay for. So, you know, things like baggage fees are a great example. Not everybody who travels checks a bag, and so if they're not checking a bag, they don't want to have that added cost bundled into their ticket.
I think initially when these baggage fees came out, we were up in arms about it, and now it's starting to make more sense if we realize that there is another benefit available to us by not having to pay for it and getting better and more affordable airfares. Now, you talked a little bit about the demographics of the average flyer when we talk about income. How are the demographics broken down even more as far as the average flyer is concerned?
Sure. Interestingly, they're split 50-50, male and female, and age is also pretty evenly divided. About 35% are in the kind of millennial, the 18 to 34 category. About 35% also in the 35 to 54 category. And then the retirees, the 55 and older, is about 30% of the flyers. We're also seeing the diverseness of people who travel match the diverseness of the U.S. population in terms of all ethnicities represented, and even all regions of the U.S. When we looked at it, you know, breaking down the regions of the U.S. by population, the people and percentage of people who flew from those regions matched them almost exactly.
It's interesting to find out that there is equality when you're talking about demographics across the board. Usually, some things lean one way or the other, or have a higher group in one category. So that is very interesting, and I guess it is a sign of the times. Now, what's the geographic breakdown of the flying public? I know you said that people even in smaller cities are flying, but the reason I raise this question is because there was another news story, an article that I did a few months ago that talked about the risk of losing air service to smaller cities and airports.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so not surprisingly, the number and the breakdown of, as I mentioned, by region, it matches up almost exactly. But if you think about urban areas, which, of course, are the ones that have the larger airports, that's where we see about 33% of the traffic coming from. And by urban, I'm defining those regions as, you know, an area that's got more than 5 million people. And then another 34% are coming from the semi-urban, which is sort of, you know, in the 1 to 5 million category. And then smaller numbers come from the smaller towns, so about 27% from sort of the suburban suburbs and the smaller towns. And then rural accounts for about 11%.
Okay. Now, I know you said earlier that airlines are reinvesting and making major investments into that traveler's experience, but what kind of investments in the experience did flyers say they wanted?
Well, we asked the question of, if you could talk to the CEO and tell the CEO what you wanted the CEO to invest in, we looked at a couple of things, and they said, and the biggest things that they were important to them were onboard comfort, customer service, and route and network schedule. So, you know, one of the things that really reinforce the onboard comfort are the fact that we have so many new planes coming into the system. These are planes, you know, that have not only different and differently configured seats and more seating options, but they have larger overheads, they have, you know, larger windows, they have better lighting. In some cases, even the humidity is different and improving the experience for customers. So that's really a key to how we're making traveling better in the onboard experience. And then investments in customer service, and we're seeing that across the board as well in terms of training and in terms of different options that customers have when they engage, and also the technology is an important factor. It was lower on the list of things that they want, the top three being onboard comfort, customer service, and route and network schedule. Schedule and route is so important for people, you know, who are looking to make plans that they can do a nonstop, or that they can have a schedule that's convenient, that, you know, leaves at a convenient time and gets them to their destination at a time that's also convenient. So those are the key drivers for when we ask people, if you could tell the CEO what's important to you, that's what they said.
So do you feel that with the results of the survey that the consumer wants, what the consumer's wants are and what the airlines are giving are on the same page?
I do. I think that, I mean, the beauty of air travel and the relationship between customers and airlines is it's a very competitive business, and airlines know that, and airlines are competing for those dollars every day, and so they are listening to customers in a way that you know, in a more heightened way because it is so competitive, and they want to have that repeat business, and they want to have that loyalty with that customer. They want that customer to take the business trip with them, but then also, you know, come back and take their family on vacation. So it's in the airline's own best interest to be listening to customers and to be providing what it is customers want. And the beauty is customers, you know, have responded to us in a way, but they really respond every day with their wallets and with who they choose to fly with.
Right. Well, it's good to know that the airlines are listening and they're giving the customers or the consumers what they want. Did the survey address how mobile devices are affecting the travel experience?
They did. You know, as I think I mentioned earlier, air travelers are very tech-savvy people, and the importance of, you know, the things that you can do on your smartphone is hugely important. But we found that the vast majority, you know, 98% of people who fly have some sort of personal computer or mobile device. And so we found when they're flying, they much prefer to check in on their own. And with the vast majority, 72%, checking in either on a personal computer or on a mobile device or an app. 17% are checking in at the airport, and just 11% are checking in at the airport ticket counter, which is a huge change if you go back even, you know, 10 or 15 years, when that was really your only option to check in, was to show up at the airport. And that improves the overall travel experience. So many travelers want to just get in, go through security as quickly as possible, be checked in, get to the gate, and anything that we can do to make that simpler and put the power in their hands is a benefit both to the consumer and to the airline.
Absolutely. How long does the average trip last based on the average flyer?
For the average flyer, it's less than a week. On average, for both domestic and international, it was about 6.6 days. For personal domestic travel, it tends to be anywhere between 4 and 7 days. So it's generally less than a week.
Where did U.S. flyers go in?
For the most part, the largest percentage of travel was domestic. Some 67% was in, 63%, excuse me, were domestic trips. And then the next biggest area we saw travel was Latin America. That's Mexico, Central America, and South America. It was about 14% of the flights, with smaller percentages going to Europe and to Canada.
What should we expect in 2016?
We should expect more of the same. The great news for customers is it's affordable to fly. I mentioned airfare has been down. It was down overall. It's 10% below, even when you include ancillary fees. Airfare has been falling for the past year, and real airfares, including ancillary services, remain 10% below 2000 levels. And according to the DOT, average domestic fare decreased to $372 in the third quarter of last year, and that's down 6.2% from $396 in the third quarter of 2014. So it's really the lowest level since 2010. So because airfare is so affordable and so available, we're projecting more of the same. 75% of the flyers and 53% of all Americans that we talked to said that they were somewhat or very likely to travel this year. So we're expecting more of the same in 2016.
I know that it's doing a little bit better, especially against the euro. So hopefully travel to Europe will pick up. But also I read a report today that this summer we can expect extremely low fuel prices as well, even lower than what we've seen in the past couple of years. So I'm sure that's going to have a big effect as well.
Yeah, we did, separate from the study, Airlines for America had provided a spring travel forecast, and in that we were seeing an increase of travel, but also an increase of available seats. So the airlines are adding the number of available seats to accommodate the growth. And in that we projected we were going to see domestically the highest level we've seen since 2008, but internationally we were projecting that we would see a record number of travelers. So that should be good news for everybody traveling internationally as well.
Well, Jean, is there anything else you'd like to share with us today on what your study revealed and the state of airlines in America?
Sure. One of the things we talk about quite a bit is that air travel is, and airlines in general, tend to be, they're very anecdotal, and it's a very anecdotal industry because everybody flies, because flying is so relatable. As our survey noted, 81% of people have flown in their lifetime. So that's a huge number of people who have experienced travel, and nearly half of the people travel every year. So it's a very relatable experience. What we're trying to get to is actually have some data instead of just anecdotes. And the data tells us that customers are satisfied. While we're happy that 80% of people are satisfied, we'd like that number to be higher, and airlines continue to work to improve that. Being profitable enables them to do things they hadn't been able to do before. They're able to pay their people more money and provide profit sharing, which provides a natural incentive for airline employees to continue to do great work on behalf of customers, and enables us to add routes and increase our schedule and offer travelers more option and buy new planes and all these things that really make the travel experience that much better. And airlines are continuing to work on that. And we continue to believe it's a great time to fly. We are in the safest period of aviation history. Airfare is extremely affordable, and customers have choices, and they've told us that they value those choices. So all of these things look to be a great summer of travel.
And one last thing, and the question that I know may be on the minds of my audience, is safety and security. How are the airlines approaching safety and security, as well as how do the flyers respond or feel about it?
Safety is our number one priority. We are the safest mode of interstate travel, and that's we don't take that lightly. That is our first job always, and it's a job for us that's never done. It's always evolving, always responding and anticipating whatever the next risk or threat may be. And so it's our first priority. We work very cooperatively with our employees, with government, with TSA and DHS, with airplane manufacturers. It is ongoing work, and it's our top priority, and it's something that we continue to work on. One of the things we're working with TSA, as you know, the government has inherent responsibility for security, we partner with them and in ways that we can both improve security and improve the travel experience. And when one of the things that we are working on is how do we increase enrollment in programs like TSA PreCheck and the CBP Global Entry Program. Interestingly, on our survey, when we talked to people and asked them if they were members of Global Entry or TSA PreCheck, and then looked back at how satisfied they were, the numbers were even higher for satisfaction, up to 95% very satisfied with their travel experience because they were getting through security in a more seamless way without waiting in line as long. We're looking at ways of how do we put the resources behind the greatest risk and also make sure we are improving the travel experience while enhancing safety. And one of the ways to do that is by increasing enrollment in programs like TSA and Global Entry.
Are the survey results available to the public?
They are. They are linked to our website at airlines.org.
Well, thanks again for joining me and providing such a wealth of information and making us feel a little bit more comfortable that things are being done right in the airline industry and it's the best way to go. Thank you again for joining me. I fly a lot, which means I'm aware of a lot of the rules of flying. I do, however, find it humorous and interesting to watch as I go through airport security the number of people who are not aware of some of the basic rules, like the 311 rule. So I sent out Mo to see how many people knew about it.
Traveling Coach Arati with your girl Mo, always on the go, and I am checking your knowledge about travel. We all say we travel, we all love to travel, but do you know the rules to traveling? Today we are going to expound on the 311 rule. What is the 311 rule? Let's see who knows. So I'm here with Nisha. I have a very important question for you. Do you think that it's a true statement to say that you must know your rules if you're traveling on planes?
With the way things are going these days, yeah, you need to know the rules, because if you are caught in an airport with something that you wouldn't think was harmful and you got caught with it and you had to go in some cuffs or you for a strip search or something, you'd be pretty upset.
Yeah, nobody wants to be put in cuffs or a strip search or a strip search and put in cuffs or both at the same time. Nobody wants to deal with that, Nisha, right?
I know I wouldn't.
No, so you got to know your rules, so we ain't got to get strip searched and cuffed, right, Nisha?
Follow the rules.
All right, so you're here with Mo with the Traveling Culturati, and I have...
James.
Hey, James, how you doing?
Oh, I'm wonderful.
Awesome. So, James, do you travel much?
I used to. Not much anymore, though.
So when you did you travel on planes, trains, or automobiles?
Mostly planes.
Okay, cool. So they have this rule with TSA for plane travel. It's called the 311 rule. Are you familiar?
I believe it's to do with your bottle size.
Yes, James. It does have something to do with bottles, but I need the answer in detail. Traveling Culturati with your girl Mo, always on the go. And I am here with Sean. Sean, are you familiar with the TSA rule, which is called the 311 rule?
Is that the liquid in my bag rule, or the not taking off my shoes, or not submitting to a search? Which one is that?
I don't know, Sean. You tell me. I have walked into...
Herbert, how y'all doing?
All right, Herbert. Herbert, let me ask you a question. Have you traveled before?
Of course.
Plane, train, automobile?
All of the above.
All of the above?
Yes.
All right, are you really good with your travel rule?
What do you mean by rules?
TSA has formed this rule called the 311 rule. Are you familiar?
I am not.
You're not familiar?
No, tell me more.
But you say you travel.
Yeah, it can't be open. You got to take all the jewelry stuff out. No narcotics. No anything.
No narcotics for sure. None of that, because that is illegal. And you don't want to do anything illegal on the plane, Herb, right?
Yes.
You're kind of close with the rule, Herb. But we're going to try one more time, and then I'm just going to have to give you the answer, okay?
Yes.
You're on the plane. And there's certain products that you would like to take with you.
Your carry-on bag?
Your carry-on bag is not a rule, Herb.
I don't know. It's too hard.
How are we supposed to follow the rules and we don't even know the rules? Traveling Culturati with your girl Mo, always on the go. Back to you, Javon.
Thanks, Mo. Well, a couple of people came pretty close, but not enough to keep the line moving at airport security. The Transportation Security Administration, or TSA, sets and enforces some rules for air travel that limits the amount of liquids a passenger can bring on an airplane in carry-on baggage. These rules were put in place following an attempt to bomb airplanes using liquids as explosives in 2006. And to simplify the rule, they came up with 311. The 311 rule limits the amount of liquid you can bring on an airplane in your carry-on luggage. Air travelers are limited to liquid containers no larger than 3.4 ounces, and all containers must be placed in one-quart transparent zip-top bag, and each passenger is allowed only one carry-on bag. You can have as many 3.4-ounce containers as long as they fit in the quart-sized bag when it's sealed. There are also other exceptions and restricted or prohibited items. You can learn about them all at TSA.gov. You're in the know about the 311 rule for air travelers. Now keep the line moving. When I come back, I've got the Culture Report. I'm Javon Harley with the Traveling Culturati on HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141.